He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted with this, our final pre-Super Bowl episode. And for the 53rd time, in a country torn by embarrassing politics and social reckonings, in a $15 billion a year league dealing with a historically bad officiating call and the usual existential crises, and on a day when 110 million people will watch around the world, yes, another football holiday is upon us. The NFL title game will be played in a $1.5 billion architectural marvel in Atlanta, a stadium sponsored by Mercedes-Benz, just a long punt or two away from Vine City, where 4 of every 10 people live in poverty amid rows of vacant houses and lots, in the birthplace of Martin Luther King and in the cradle of the civil rights movement. All of this while major black artists such as Jay-Z boycott the halftime show in their continuing support for Colin Kaepernick, who no longer is playing in the league because, well, he hasn't been a quality quarterback in a very long time, contrary to opinions that he's a victim of racism. The Super Bowl always has been a barometer of the American condition in a particular time and space. Nothing has changed.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18. You know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
I've tried to get over my bout with Patriots fatigue and my genuine disinterest in their matchup with the upstart LA Rams, and I've done so by embracing New England's place in history as a dynasty. Win on Sunday, and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady will have bookended championships over a 19-year stretch, which is astonishing in a league set up to stifle dynasties. But lose on Sunday, and the Patriots are only 5-4 in Super Bowls, losers of two straight to NFC underdogs with fledgling head coaches, and suddenly that dynasty wouldn't look quite as grand. As it is, the Patriots have polarized many sports fans after a history of cheating scandals and their relentless appearances in the public eye over an entire generation now, which is why the general rooting interest, if only by default, is the Rams, with their 33-year-old head coach, with a face out of a frat house kegger, and a quarterback unknown to the masses, even if you spotted them, the Jared and the Goff. Indeed, this has been a generational gap Super Bowl week like no other. That's a nod to Jim Nance. And the Rams were so respectful and almost reverential to the Patriots. I mean, it was almost refreshing to hear Brady answer another sort of question, if he's a better athlete than LeBron James. Of course he isn't, but I wanted to hear the answer anyway.
We're similar athletes, LeBron and I, both great size and speed, jumping ability, shooting. Not quite. No, he's a much better athlete than me.
I hate to disappoint those who want the fresh and the new to pull the upset, but the Patriots are going to win number 6, and here is how. 1, a lopsided experience edge. This will be the 9th Super Bowl for Brady, and get this, that's 5 more than the Rams have collectively accrued as a roster. 9 for Brady, 4 for the Rams collectively. McVay never has sniffed the Super Bowl, even as an assistant coach, and the Rams are here, face it, only because of an all-time officiating blunder. You really think Belichick is going to be out-strategized by a coach half his age? Here was McVay stroking the legend as he did all week.
when you look at Coach Belichick, the best thing that he probably does is, you know, the relationships with his players, but then also the ownership and the expertise that he possesses in the game of football, how to set up game plans, how to put players in a position to consistently succeed, and having a standard and having a process that they're committed to. In a lot of ways, you know, that's very similar to what we try to implement with the Rams. I think from a motivation standpoint, like I've said over and over, and like, you know, you'll hear our team, our players, our coaches talk about, it starts with foundationally building and developing a relationship.
At one point, when somebody asked about his appreciation for football history and history in general, Belichick actually went off for 6 minutes and 15 seconds on Gettysburg, his parents, his family's collection of 4,000 books, and his hometown of Annapolis, Maryland. I guess Bill felt confident enough about the game not to respond with, we're just on to Los Angeles. 6 minutes and 15 seconds? I don't think you could line up all of his sound bites through the years and they wouldn't total 6 minutes and 15 seconds. You know how prepared this guy is? He actually makes Brady study punt coverages with that attention to detail, largely defining the Patriots' reign. Two, sense of history. The Patriots know what's at stake here, and they're motivated by the sting of losing to Nick Foles and the Eagles, and also by a 2017 season dominated by strife between Belichick and Brady involving the mysterious trainer Alex Guerrero. Now it's about kumbaya, and they know they can't blow two straight now with Rob Gronkowski and Devin McCourty pondering retirement. Now you have an urgency that some elements of this dynasty are about to end. Listen to Gronkowski explain why he is indeed serious about retirement and nod your head along with me, realizing this is a life and death sport that reduces men to vegetables if they're not careful.
To tell you the truth, just try and imagine getting hit all the time and trying to be where you want to be every day in life. It's tough. It's difficult. I mean, to take hits to the thigh, take hits to your head, abusing your body isn't what your brain wants. So it can, when your body's abused, it can bring down your mood. You got to be able to deal with that too throughout the season. You got to be able to deal with that going in the games, and no one realizes that, and no one expects, and everyone expects us players to be wide awake every single day. And it's like, yo, like I just took 50 hits to my head, or like, you're not to my head, but I'm saying I just took 50 collisions, and then like the next day everyone wants you to be up. You, they want practice full speed. They, next week they want the game to be full speed, but they don't understand sometimes what players are going through with their bodies, with their minds. And that's why I would say you see a shift in players in games where people are down the whole game, and then you see all of a sudden next week it's like, how did this team just go from one switch to the other?
Yes, I do think Gronk is off to Hollywood where he can be a lovable lunkhead, and the Patriots, who need a Philadelphia correction for their legacy, will ride that sense of urgency and that gathering finality to some degree to win another championship. At least Gronk changed his mind about attending Shaquille O'Neal's Funhouse Super Bowl party, wisely saying he'll be spending Friday night with his teammates. Three, Brady is jacked. Jacked up like I've never seen the man. At 41, Tom already has won the war over time. Now, after years of letting his feelings get hurt by criticism, he is openly embracing the National Patriots backlash by adopting a "we're still here" mantra. Remember, Belichick wanted Brady to drift away so Jimmy Garoppolo could take over? Brady has overcome that slight thanks to the support of owner Robert Kraft. He of the sneaker collection, the Meek Mill defense, and the girlfriend half his age. And now Kraft, of course, ready to offer Brady a contract extension that will take him to age 45, perhaps. 45!
The last 3 years, we've been privileged to go to the Super Bowl with a quarterback in place. I would be quite surprised if he didn't continue for quite a while as our quarterback.
And how much does having him mean to you and the franchise?
Well, it's he and having the head coach that we have, and having Tom, there's a unique symmetry there and chemistry, and it carries over to the whole organization. I think we're very lucky.
We used to be shocked at that thought of Brady playing in his 40s. Now it's just part of his legend. Ho-hum. Just as McVay was left to praise Belichick all week, Goff had to do the same when it came to Brady.
Man, a little loaded there, huh? It's got to be Tom, I think so. I think after winning five and, you know, he's been doing it for such a long time, and I think you got to say Tom.
What do you like the most about
his game? His accuracy. His accuracy has only gotten better as he's gotten older, and he's only gotten more skilled. I grew up, you know, in the era when it was kind of Tom versus Peyton all the time, and naturally I gravitated towards Peyton for whatever reason, and grew up a huge fan of his, and from a young age, before I even knew much about the game, just a fan of his, a fan of Tom's as well, and guys like Drew, guys like Phillip, guys like Eli that are, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, I'm a huge fan of.
A lot of people want to know, why is Brady so hated? I don't think that's the word. I think there's Tom envy, there's Tom jealousy. It's about his wife, it's about how he looks, it's about his diet. The dude's got it together. Yeah, he blew it with Deflategate, but you know what? There are a lot worse people out there in sports than Tom Brady. And face it, every dude out there wanted to be Tom Brady at one point in his life, including me, maybe. Yeah. 4, Brady's offensive line is akin to the Secret Service. He hasn't been sacked in the postseason. He's been touched on only 11% of his passing attempts. This against league-leading sack specialists with the Chiefs and the Chargers. Now, they say Aaron Donald, the Rams' beast in the middle, is unblockable. If the Patriots do manage to control Donald, this game could be a blowout as Brady picks apart a vulnerable Rams pass defense with a healthy Julian Edelman, an inspired Gronk, James White catching balls out of backfield, and they'll get 100 yards or so from running back Sony Michel. And 5, Belichick, the master of taking away one element and collapsing an entire offense in the process, is eyeing up young Jared Goff as his next victim. Only if Todd Gurley is healthy, in a good mood, and back to his all-pro self will Goff have the freedom to control the passing game as he did in the second half against New Orleans. Otherwise, I'm seeing 2 or 3 picks of the young QB, and it doesn't help the kicker Greg the Leg Zuerlein, the hero of the NFC title game, is dealing with an issue with his plant foot. So in the big picture, I see a first half of Brady carving up the Rams, who aren't quite ready for the moment, and they sabotage themselves with mistakes. By the time the Rams wake up with fourth quarter success, it's too late. And once again, as a country groans, the New England Patriots are champions for the 6th time. Patriots 33, Rams 26. I think they still play actual basketball games in the NBA, though sometimes I wonder if the league is all about trade demands, agents, rumors, Twitter, and relocation drama. Only hours after voicing his concern about the Knicks' future and only days after Anthony Davis made his blockbuster trade demand, Kristaps Porzingis talked himself out of New York with the injury-prone 7'3" unicorn heading to Dallas to join the gifted teen Luka Doncic, though I would never trust any scheme involving the Knicks' inept owner, James Dolan. This actually brings a little bit of hope to that godforsaken franchise, because not only do the Knicks get a potential all-star point guard in Dennis Smith Jr. and 2 eventual first-round picks, they've also cleared out sufficient cap room in dumping Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee to clear enough space, about $75 million, for 2 maximum free agents, just in case Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are interested next summer. I doubt they will be, but at least give them credit for trying to loosen up this iceberg there. And who knows if the Knicks' current tank job succeeds this season? Maybe the NBA office will rig the lottery right down the street. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Maybe the Knicks will get lucky enough to win the number one pick, which would bring them the sport's next great beast, Zion Williamson, whom they could keep or maybe trade in a deal for, yep, Anthony Davis, whose father, by the way, is said to be liking New York as a destination for his son. All of this dizzy activity while the Lakers, sensing they might lose out on Davis if they don't make a big pitch right now, have offered everybody on their roster but LeBron to the New Orleans Pelicans, who are said to actually covet Lonzo Ball, I don't know why, and might be tempted to do a deal right now that would include Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Ivica Zubac, and a number one pick. But there is opposition in the league, namely from Greg Popovich to any Davis deal involving the Lakers. Popovich didn't like it when the Lakers are going after Kawhi Leonard. He doesn't like this. Popovich has a lot of clout in this league. He can call the New Orleans GM, Del Demps, a buddy of his, and say, do not trade him to the Lakers. And I don't think that's going to happen. At least for now, the Pelicans are resisting the urge to deal Davis before that trade deadline next week. Then you have the Celtics, whose future may or may not include Irving, who has said, wait for it, ready for this, to be interested in a reunion with LeBron. The same domineering teammate he couldn't wait to flee in Cleveland. My God, is everybody on drugs in this league? Or, think about this, if the Knicks somehow do get Davis, maybe Irving ends up in New York. Or if the Pelicans wait until the summer to weigh offers for Davis, as they should, and the Celtics do get Davis, Irving could stay in Boston. But Davis's agent, Rich Paul, also LeBron's Bobo, has been adamant that Davis ultimately will sign with the Lakers in 2020 and reject any long-term deal elsewhere, meaning the Celtics reportedly are interested in only a one-year deal for Davis, at least for now, which would weaken what the Pelicans can get for him. So as all this floats around, and if it's true Boston only wants him for a year, but maybe the Lakers floated that, then maybe the Pelicans will do the deal with the Lakers, but who knows who's telling the truth here and what's fake news. My head already is about to explode when it comes to Anthony Davis. So with James returning to the Lakers Thursday night, Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka will try their damnedest to convince New Orleans to take the house next week. And if not, well, I think Anthony Davis is going to have a very strange year and a half ahead. The Pelicans likely would sit him the rest of the season to protect him from injury, and he could play next season in Boston or New York, who knows where, before he signs with the Lakers, I assume, in 2020. That would be the summer of 2020. By then, I've got to make sure this is clear. LeBron will be pushing 36 years old. Okay? Here was James asked about the drama after the Lakers' victory over the Clippers. He did return to the lineup. Game went into overtime. LeBron was roughed up a little by Patrick Beverley, and then Lance Stephenson was in the middle of a mini brawl there, and the Clippers and the Lakers have a little riot at Staples Center. Not really a riot, but they kind of went after it, and, you know, it's kind of funny. I'm monitoring the tape right now, and LeBron had to pull Lance out of there, and you got Avery Bradley in the middle. Wow, a rivalry, the Lakers and the Clippers. Well, why not? Because at the moment, they're going for the eighth spot in the Western Conference Finals. It's like I'm doing this game live or something. It's like I'm Tony Romo or something. More on Romo later. Here was LeBron. We haven't heard from LeBron in a while.
I wasn't positive every day throughout this whole process. I probably had more negative moments personally than I did than positive. But you know, when you got a great support staff, you know, it helps out a lot. You know, there was times where I felt great, and then, you know, a day or two later, I didn't feel so good. There was times where I thought I could come back faster, you know, then, you know, be back, you know, quicker than I came back, you know, now. But it wasn't reacting the right way, so I just had to be patient, which, you know, I'm not patient at all. But, you know, I just put a lot of hard work into it, just getting back out there. You gotta understand, I've never been injured before like that. The most I've ever sat out was 2 weeks. You know, I broke my wrist when I was in high school as a junior. So, you know, for me to, I didn't come here to sit on the bench. I love clothes. I love suits, but I didn't come here to put on a suit every day. I come here to put on a jersey and some shorts. That's what I came here to do and lead a team, best way I know how. So, that's the frustration part when you're seeing your team struggle and you know how much you can help them and you can't do anything in a suit and tie. So, that's where the negativity starts to creep into the mind.
Not that the cities representing the two Super Bowl teams engender any great love nationally. For all the jerky behavior by certain New England fans and media, they obviously have nothing to complain about, as a Patriots title would be the 12th by a team in that region since 2001. Imagine a 4th Red Sox title in October, a 6th Patriots title in February, an NBA Finals appearance by the Celtics, and a Stanley Cup Finals appearance by the Bruins. I mean, it could happen, and those mass holes still would find something to be jerky about. As for Los Angeles, who loves a place where it's sunny and 70 amid a polar vortex? Okay, it has been raining here. You feel a little better in Chicago? LA has become a grotesque landing spot in the eyes of many, a sprawling blob to which billionaire owners can escape while abandoning markets that won't build them new stadia. Rams owner Stan Kroenke never was honest with the people of St. Louis, and they are so bitter in Missouri, you're going to have trouble finding anybody in that city still rooting for the Rams. Kroenke's $5 billion stadium, built with private money, is the very symbol of Hollywood excess. And knowing how hard the NFL actually pushed to have not one but two franchises here in LA, it's understandable why some league people saw a conspiracy theory amid that horrible call in New Orleans. The league wanted so badly for LA to be in a Super Bowl. I live in LA, Santa Monica. It is not a Rams town. I don't see any buzz anywhere, certainly no hysteria. They don't know Jared Goff from Jared Leto. I'm not convinced anybody actually is from L.A. anyway. Chris is, but it's about it. Like me, they come from someplace else, and on Sundays here, they put on their hometown garb, and they flock to Browns bars and Packers bars and Bears bars and Patriots bars and Giants bars, etc., etc. Rams bars? I have yet to find a Rams bar. But 15 million people are in the region, which means they have a chance to grow the NFL brand here. The Rams do. The Chargers are the Clippers in that equation. Actually, I don't even think they're the Clippers yet. They're going to be charging 1/5 the prices in the new stadium that the Rams are for the suites and the premium seats. And certainly reaching the Super Bowl doesn't hurt in regard to the Rams and ticket prices. Here was Sean McVay insisting LA is a Rams town, though I would argue it's more a Raiders town and a USC town, believe it or not, even still.
Well, since we've been here the last couple of years, they've certainly, made us feel very supported. And, we're very appreciative of the way that support has grown. I love LA, love living there, love what this fan base, how they make us feel, and wouldn't want to be anywhere else. So we love LA.
And I'm enjoying the Tony Romo lovin' as much as anyone, as the hottest new name in sports broadcasting makes his Super Bowl debut for CBS. But just a warning here, when Romo makes his name as a booth analyst on his uncanny ability to predict plays before they happen, then he'd better not slip on his accuracy percentage. That might be too much to ask. The Wall Street Journal watched 2,500 plays over almost 50 hours and said that Romo was right 68% of the time this season when he called out a play, which, given the complexities of play calls and audibles, is remarkable. And he was near perfect in the fourth quarter and overtime of the AFC Championship game, in which he called 11 plays correctly down the stretch. Not that Romo will sweat it if he does start whiffing, because broadcasting is only a temporary thing. Eventually, Tony says he wants to coach. Interesting how Romo, at a press conference, picked a final score on Sunday, but didn't say who would win the game. Romo's sound here.
I'm going to go 28-24, and I think the team who has 24 has the ball at the end and they don't score.
Ooh. I mean, come on. Romo Stradamus is actually wimping out? Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. And Chris, real simple, who wins Sunday and why?
Jay, I've gone back and forth with this in my heart, my head. Everything I think I know about football, everything I think I know about the Rams and the Patriots, and guess what? I'm pulling for the upset. I think the Rams pull it off. The energy, the hype, the magic season somehow rolls on. I think Goff and McVay conspire, put together an amazing, dazzling, high-powered offense that gets out to a quick jump. And I think the Rams' defense does pull up, as I talked about earlier in the week, much like the Eagles did last year to the Pats, somehow gets a fumble, an interception, something that leaves the Rams standing with the lead when four quarters are up.
And Chris, does it help or hurt the NBA when, yes, the off-the-court relocation drama keeps these stories hot in the news, yet also minimizes what the league is supposed to be about? Basketball games!
I mean, it's become the norm of what the NBA is now. This is just what it is. Do I think it's good? No, I think it's horrible. I said to somebody yesterday, the Cavs and the Warriors were going to play each other in the NBA Finals at the beginning of the season, year after year. Is it any different than wrestling? I mean, honestly. And now we're seeing where the Knicks are going to get set up, the Lakers are going to be set up, potentially with Anthony Davis, with LeBron, talks of Kawhi, maybe somebody else going to the Clippers. You have Houston set up nicely. This is what the NBA wants, these big market teams doing well. And that's great and all, but it just makes it so obvious of what's going on. I just feel like never before has it seemed so scripted, if you will. And that's really unfortunate for the NBA, I think. But people continue to watch. People continue to love it. It's a superstar league built around the stars, and this is the way it is. And I don't think that it's ever going to change, Jay. It's only going to get worse and worse, so we might as well just accept it, I guess, and enjoy the show.
And, Chris, you've been in sports media a long time, and you've seen phenomenons emerge overnight. With Tony Romo a huge hit so far in the booth, what advice would you give Romo to make sure he stays on top?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, you know, he's not that far removed from being an NFL quarterback. But as offenses change and as plays change and different things happen, he won't be somebody who can recognize it because things change. Now, of course, you always have football in your heart. But remember, he's pretty fresh removed from the game. You don't hear Troy Aikman throwing out these predictions because he can't see the things necessarily going on. It's been a long time since he's known an offensive playbook. And I think right now Romo's just got to ride this wave. Also develop another bit, if you will, so that he can continue to have something else to his repertoire other than being this guy who predicts the plays beforehand. It's great. It's fun. You ride that wave, but it's going to get old, and he's not going to be able to do that bit forever, so he's got to develop something else, Jay. But right now, ride the fun, my man.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. As Major League Baseball slides into an eventual labor war from which it might never return, I would like just one owner to step up and say, damn it, my desire to win and appease the paying customers is far greater than any collusion pledge to my fellow owners not to splurge on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. Could that team be the San Diego Padres? After years of irrelevance, the Padres are meeting with Harper, and if they are serious, they should simply ante up significantly more than the few other suitors, right? That is called outbidding the competition, which is the American way and used to be the baseball way until the owners decided to downsize the salary structure in the middle of a collective bargaining agreement, which is dirty business. I have no problem being fiscally responsible when so many big contracts to players in their 30s have gone sour, but Harper and Machado are only 26. MVP caliber monster talents just entering their prime. I know I mention this every podcast, but I am thoroughly disgusted by the arrogance of the owners who hide behind advanced analytics and have become blind to baseball's reality. The sport is slowly dying. And if the Harper-Machado slog leads to a labor impasse in a couple of years, this sport might die sooner than anybody thinks. Impulsive as Jerry Jones has been as a businessman, he has been uncommonly patient with Coach Jason Garrett in Dallas. But Jones has about had it, refusing to grant Garrett a contract extension and turning 2019 into a make-or-break season for the coach. Jones, who's getting up there in years, needs a big hit with his next hire, And don't be shocked if Sean Payton leaves New Orleans for the biggest contract in NFL coaching history, or if Jones coaxes Lincoln Riley away from Oklahoma. And then, of course, there's Tony Romo. It pains me when good men have awkward moments without realizing the ramifications. NBC hockey analyst Pierre Maguire did himself no favors in coming off as a mansplainer when joined on a broadcast by five-time world champion and U.S. Olympic gold medalist Kendall Coyne Schofield, who last weekend became the first woman to compete in the NHL All-Star Skills Competition and actually beat out one NHL player, Clayton Keller, in finishing seventh in an eight-player fastest skater event. Okay, so she belongs, okay? That's the point. However, first of all, here was Maguire seemingly talking down to her.
It's been exciting, it's overwhelming, and I'm so excited to join you here.
So Tampa's going to be on your left, Pittsburgh's going to be on your right. What are you expecting out of this game? We're paying you to be an analyst, not to be a fan tonight.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Tampa start. They've been off for 10 days, haven't had a game. Pittsburgh, on the other hand, had a tough loss on Monday, got a little bit blown out of the water by New Jersey Devils, so I'm excited to see the start tonight.
Let's have a blast. Johnny, back to you.
Thanks. Then Maguire went off the ledge with this sexist deep dive.
Tense down there, Kendall, huh?
It's real intense. I need a mouth guard.
This is like Canada US in the gold medal game.
Yeah,
come
except,
on.
Except I have a cage on for that one.
I'll be your cage tonight. How's that?
Pierre apologized and Coyne Schofield defended him as a friend, but she also said she understands why people thought it was inappropriate. Damn right it was inappropriate. Real simple, Pierre. Think before you speak and realize the year is 2019, not 1973.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
As he'll tell you himself, Ray Lewis is one of the luckiest men on God's earth. He could have spent life in prison for his role in a grisly double murder outside an Atlanta nightclub in 2000. Hell, his limo was smeared with the blood of one victim, and Lewis testified he had a blood-stained white jacket that, strangely, never was seen by investigators. Yet, 1 year later, Lewis was leading the Baltimore Ravens to victory in the Super Bowl en route to a Hall of Fame career involving plenty of dancing and inspirational yelling. How did Lewis skate after he was indicted with two others in the murders? He plea bargained, testifying against two friends, settling two lawsuits with family members of the victims, and accepting 1 year of probation while the NFL fined him $250,000. The reason I address this story 19 years later is that Ray Lewis had the galling audacity to return to Atlanta this weekend to throw a party, including Pro Football Hall of Famers, Hollywood celebrities, VIPs, with proceeds going to his Ray of Hope Foundation. Said Lewis, quote, "My greatest ability is access because of my reputation, because of my name, because of my brand. I want to use it to bring people together, so I use it," unquote, Ray Lewis. In any other city, I could tolerate Lewis throwing a party at the Super Bowl, not in Atlanta, where the blood is still too fresh and the odor still sickening. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.
Welcome to Atlanta, jacking hammers and bows. Back to the mackin' and jacking the clothes. Adolescents packing a foe. A knock on the door.
Who is it?
I would happen to know. The one with the flow.
Who did it?
It was me, I suppose. JD in the rolls and looters in the cut supreme. Skating down old Nat. Tucked and lean. I split your spleen. As a matter of fact, I split your team. No blood on the sneaks. Gotta keep it so my kicks is clean. I get the cream. Cops see me flick my beans. I'm allergic to doc prescribed antihistamines. Oink, oink, pig, pig, do away with the pork. Only silverware needs a steak knife and a fork. Did you forget your manners? I'm Bruce with banners. Ludacris, Johnny Rockets when I shoot the cannon. The woolly mammoth saber tooth. Bite your tongue. I won't stop until I'm rich as the whites will come. I pull up in a black Lotus. Your plaques are bogus. So I strip them off the wall. Waiting for my cue to corner pocket eight ball. You racking them up on big paper like pancakes. Stacking them up. In fact, I'm slapping them up. Cadillac is a truck.